This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report podcast. This is the August 26th, 2020 edition of the podcast, and we are presented by Roman. Come up here later on the podcast. We're going to tell you about how you can get $15 off your first order of ED treatment from Roman. We'll let you know about 30-ish minute mark. You'll hear about that special offer that Roman does have for the MMA Report podcast listener. But Daniel, it's Tuesday afternoon as we record this show. So how's your week going so far, man?
You know, it's going all right, Jason. I'm in a weird state of mind as I enter recording this podcast because I just got done reading this article on BloodyElbow.com where they put together like the highlights of this event that took place in Thailand that was put on by the cam girl people. I think it was the cam girl people. And I was just reading through it, and it was such a clickbaity headline by the good folks at Bloody Elbow, because it was like, man and woman fight. I'm like, oh, damn, they did a man and woman fight? But no, it was a grappling contest, so that doesn't count. But yeah, the woman fighter beat the man fighter in the grappling intergender contest. You had a two-on-one fight where you had these two brothers, like small dudes, going up against this big middleweight. It was a handicap fight. Like, I was just reading through that, and I was just like, damn, bro, that's crazy. I'm in a weird state of mind coming off of that. But, you know, I'm ready to talk some normal mixed martial arts, but that's crazy to me that in the middle of this global pandemic, this was cam girl's time to shine and be like, let's just do some weird stuff.
Yeah, I saw some people were posting clips from that from Saturday. Yeah, I forget the one clip I watched. It was like the ring announcer, and I was like, oh my God, this is a S show. It was like, oh Lord. But yeah, man, it's, you know, Saturday was, I guess, a little bit of a interesting evening for me. You know, sometimes you just never know when you're going to have a tweet that's just going to get a ton of interaction. And that happened for me on Saturday night after the Daniel Rodriguez and Dwight Grant fight. And, you know, the way I wanted my tweet to come off, I think did not come off in the way that I wanted to. And it was more of a generic thought process about what we have going on in MMA. And I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably seen my tweet, but if you've not, what I wrote, it was a highlight of the end of the Rodriguez and Grant fight where I said, quote, "This fight is a perfect example of why I would love to hear a referee explain their call. In this situation, why did he not stop the fight when Grant had Rodriguez rocked and raining down punches?" And, you know, and some of the interaction I got was definitely kind of like, man, it was a good stoppage, no problem with it. Which, look, I have no problems with how the referee stopped the fight because, obviously, Grant was done. It was more of a, as I look at this sport of how I would love to see this sport evolve, it's more of that just in a general sense of when you have a referee that makes a judgment call the way Chris Tyrone made a judgment call in that fight, it would just be nice to hear them speak about what they saw and why they made the decision they said. It wasn't about railing on Chris in that situation. It was just more of just in a general sense of saying, boy, I would just love to hear from a referee explain why they didn't call a fight in a certain spot and why they did it in another spot.
Yeah, man, you got replied big time on that post. But yeah, I mean, people on social media assuming what you meant and then getting pissed off about it, that seems so far-fetched to me. But that's what happened. You know, people are on their Twitter app already pissed off. So looking at any possibility for controversy, they're going to seek at it. But I mean, when you look at that fight, I think it was a solid officiating job by the official, and that's not the point you were making. The point you were making was getting into his mind in terms of what's he looking for, what did he see that caused him to allow Rodriguez to continue to compete when he was nearly on Dream Street versus what did he see with Grant. And I think with Grant, I mean, you saw – when Grant was down, there was that moment where it looked like he was just nothing going on in the brain, right? Like this, like the when he just completely wobbled, and it just, you could tell he had no control over any body part, and that's what makes a good official. But to have some transparency and to have the official communicate to the masses what he's seeing is an overall healthy idea. It allows us, the observers of these officials, to get their perspective and to have a real sense of understanding of what the experts are doing. And when we have controversial decisions, we'll have more light shine on it. Because the thing with officials is they are heavily criticized, and I've personally criticized plenty of officials over time. But I think with officiating, the two things you would want to see are twofold: accountability and transparency. Now, accountability may in fact be greater than the common fan assumes, right? Commissions may be holding these guys more accountable than we think, but because of the lack of transparency of the process, we aren't particularly aware, so we just assume guys who make poor decisions don't necessarily have to explain it. That could or could not be the case, but we aren't sure. But when we're watching this sport and we see an official make a poor decision or a controversial decision, that's when we get frustrated, because we kind of want that accountability that these guys in charge of fighter safety seem to not get chastised or not have to confront their mistake. Whereas we're in our own normal jobs, right? If we make a mistake at work, there's going to be some accountability for why we made that mistake. Now, the thing is, it seems highly unlikely that an official will ever, you know, acquiesce to what you're wanting, right? Because for the official, there is a small amount to gain, in my opinion, in being transparent, and that is that observers will understand you and have empathy with you. But we know how the world works, and people are so polarized and so ready to lambast individuals that I don't think an official personally has too much to gain, Jason, to being transparent. I mean, if you're putting yourself in the shoes of the official, what would be your argument for them to kind of have an open line of communication in terms of possibly explaining their decisions? What's in it for them?
I don't know how much is in it for them. I look at it more from the fighter's aspect of, you know, if you are Dwight Grant in that situation, for you to sit there and hear, okay, well, what did I not do enough of? Now, look, Daniel Rodriguez was doing a great job of moving around. He wasn't, you know, turtling up. You know, he was trying to, you know, escape the position. And look, and Dwight Grant punched himself out of gas. I mean, I think we know that. To me, it's like that word you use, transparency. And that's why I want to see in this sport. I want to see us as a sport evolve. You know, when you think of the NFL, the NBA, MLB, NHL, after every season is over, all those leagues are trying to figure out of, okay, how do we improve the product? What are the things that happened this season that we can correct from a rules aspect? And sometimes I look, and I think we went a long time in this sport where that just simply did not happen. You know, we do have a core group of regulators that it's very clear that they want to move this sport forward. And look at the very first fight of the night last Saturday night of Timur Valiyev and Trevin Jones. You could certainly make the case that, you know, Timur Valiyev, maybe that fight could have been stopped in the first round. Once again, it doesn't. Trevin Jones goes out there and wins. And Daniel, I have seen a lot of crazy things in this sport, you know, in terms of the UFC, Bellator, regional shows. I can't recall a UFC show where I saw the three biggest betting underdogs all win. One was like a 14-1 underdog. Another one, I want to say, was like a 7-1 underdog. And Frankie, I want to say, it was like a 3-1 underdog.
Yeah, I was looking at the odds prior to this, and that was a big-time point. I mean, up and down this card, you had some crazy tectonic shifts in the landscape of the sport. Things we assumed would happen did not happen. Tamir Valiyev went up there against Trevin Jones, and I tell you what, Valiyev looked pretty damn good for most of the fight, man. He was having quite a bit of success with his stand-up. But Jones was solid in terms of he had some heart, and he landed a huge shot that put away Valiyev. And so all the credit for Trevin for getting just a tremendous win against a guy in Tamir who had all of the hype heading into it. A guy I was looking forward to see fight. So for Tamir, I'm like, all right, well, that sucks, but I still think he has plenty of potential, and I'm looking forward to his next fight. But that's a crazy moment, and that wasn't even the biggest upset. I mean, it had to have been Shayna Dobson beating Maria Agapova. And Agapova, again, had a lot of great moments, but that was a really back-and-forth fight. Like, Agapova, for the most part, was winning most of the action. But Dobson still did a good job of putting herself on top quite a few times. Still did a good job of changing the tide. And obviously, eventually, got on top and rained down blows and got the unbelievable upset. I mean, Dobson beating Agapova is just a result I did not see coming at all. And that fight in particular, Dobson-Agapova, is what made this card for me. This card was not something I was super enthused about, especially we had OSP's fight canceled because of COVID, and we had just a nine-fight card. But the main event was great. We had an awesome light heavyweight performance of Mike Rodriguez, and the upsets were the story of what made UFC Munoz versus Edgar so much fun for me to watch.
Yeah, it was, it was a card that I wasn't necessarily looking forward to watching. I mean, to me, the fights that interest me was obviously the main event of Edgar and Munoz. And then ultimately, the fight that I really liked was Rodriguez and Grant. Of course, that's a fight that comes together on 24 hours' notice as both their opponents unable to make it to fight night. Let me ask you, how did you score Edgar Munoz? I had it 3-2 for Munoz. I gave Munoz the first, the third, and the fourth round, and I gave Frankie the second and the fifth.
Ooh, you see, I gave Frankie 1, 2, and 5, and I gave Munoz 3 and 4. But I see a lot of people gave Munoz Pedro round one, which you did, and I didn't. I just thought that was a damn close fight. But what I saw out of Edgar in round one was just, I felt like the volume he was landing versus Pedro's kicks and power strikes, that's why I scored that for Edgar. But that was a razor-thin round, I thought, and just a razor-thin fight.
Yeah, to me, the only clear rounds I would say that I think are very clear, at least in my mind, is the second and the third round. I think the first, fourth, and fifth are all, you know, tight rounds. I think that if you're more about volume, I think the more you side with Frankie Edgar. I thought Pedro landed some more significant strikes, but look, I don't like, to me at the end of the day, Daniel, it's a close fight. If you have it, Frankie Edgar, I don't have a problem with you. You know, obviously I had Munoz. I mean, I saw some people who had the fight 4-1 Munoz. I mean, it's just a close fight, and I will tell you, Daniel, I was absolutely shocked that in the aftermath of this fight, we did not have Peter Yan coming out calling for a Frankie Edgar fight.
I know. I saw Ali Abdelaziz mention it on Twitter, and he got destroyed. He didn't get destroyed, but like people were like, chill out, bro. It's Aljo's time. But yeah, I mean, Peter Yan, if he was a smart dude, he'd want that Edgar fight. But he is a smart guy, by the way. I don't want to offend Peter Yan. That man can destroy me, and he's very smart. So, Peter Yan, do not fight me. But, like, the Frankie Edgar fight is just a much easier fight for him than Aljo. And you saw, you know, Dana White taking so long to commit to the Sterling-Peter Yan matchup. It was unbelievable that it's like maybe that was what he was waiting for, an Edgar performance. And so, Yan Edgar, I mean, that would have been it. But, yeah, I mean, we're getting Yan Aljo, thankfully. This was awesome, though, because we get one more ride with Frankie Edgar. I mean, Pedro Munoz is a tough, tough 135er. And again, if you had different judges, we're talking about a Pedro Munoz victory. But at 38, Frankie Edgar moves down to 135, He goes against one of the top guys in the weight class, and he performs incredibly well on the feet. He showcases great resolve. I can't imagine how Frankie's legs are feeling right now. I mean, Pedro battered him, but Edgar, and those legs are such an important aspect of his game, the foundation of his game for the movement and the volume. The dude had great speed at 135, and it's just a great sight to see that he is still maintaining his run, because, again, Frankie, unfortunately, isn't a big draw, right? He fought in the main event, and, you know, if he took his pants down and showed his butt crack, I don't even know if that would have gone trending on Twitter, unfortunately. It just wasn't an event that people were talking about. Maybe it was the NBA playoffs. I mean, that's a big part, but another part was it wasn't a big fight card. So Frankie's a living legend, and it's nice to see the living legend still be relevant and still be a guy who we could see a fight for a championship. And I mean, I think I saw you mention it on Twitter. The obvious matchup for Edgar isn't for the championship, right? It's a legacy fight against another living legend.
I was going to bring that up. To me, I think it makes all the sense in the world that you do Edgar versus Dominick Cruz. I mean, obviously, Dom coming off the title loss against Henry Cejudo, to me, it just makes so much sense with the UFC needing so many main events for these fight night cards. To me, that's a fight that makes a lot of sense as a main event of a fight night card. It could be a co-main event or, you know, the third fight on a pay-per-view. I mean, to me, that's just a fight that makes so much sense. And especially as you look at how they've been matching up this bantamweight division, to me, that's just a fight that just makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, it does. And it's a big legacy fight, too. It really feels like we've gotten most of the quote-unquote dream matches that we would have wanted in these lighter weight classes. Like, when you look at, like, the guys who are just the absolute studs, I think we've seen them compete against each other. I mean, the one I want to see is Cruz and Aldo fight each other. Like, mm-hmm. like that one I really, really want to see. So I think the Cruz-Aldo fight and the Cruz-Edgar fight, those are all my lighter weight bucket lists. I think the only shame is maybe we didn't see it 4 years ago, just because Cruz and Edgar probably would have been pretty spry. But, man, both those guys look pretty fast still. And it just, again, makes all the sense in the world. Why? Because the winner of that fight is immediately in title contention. Cruz had a pretty rough performance. It wasn't great. When he contended for the title, he got a title fight that he didn't deserve. But if he goes out and beats Edgar, boom, back in title contention. If Edgar beats Munoz and then he beats Dominick Cruz, I mean, he has the name value to get the winner of Jan Aljo. So I just think the fact that it's a legacy fight, and also just like, I think both those guys are very similar in the way they approach their stand-up game. That would make this fight just an absolute banger and a barn burner.
It's something I want to mention that I forgot to mention earlier when we were talking about my tweet about the referee angle. Do you get the same feeling that I do that referees are allowing fights to continue longer than, say, they did a year ago?
Yeah, I do for sure. I feel like we see it up and down the card. I felt like we saw it in the main event of Bellator and Nemkov and Bader. And the Nemkov Bader fight isn't like I thought. When I say that, don't project onto me that that's a bad thing. I think the Nemkov Bader officiating was fine, especially in a championship fight. I really think you got to prolong those. But the trend itself is noticeable, and I feel like it really became noticeable, obviously, after some of the Herb Dean. I mean, we're talking about Anthony Smith later on in the show. That Anthony Smith Glover fight was just it was just a huge moment when it comes to officiating taking forever to stop a fight, and we've seen that quite often. So, I mean, for you, let's say it is a trend. What do you think was the big catalyst for said trend?
The only thing I can point to is Colby Covington coming out after his fight against Usman and really attacking Mark Goddard for not giving him more of an opportunity to stay in the fight. I mean, I was before I did the show today, I interviewed Natan Levy, who fought in LFA last weekend. And to say that Natan Levy had to weather some adversity in the second round of his fight against Ben Lugo will be the understatement of this podcast. You could definitely make the case that the referee could have stopped the fight. I even asked Natan about it. And he goes, yeah, I think I need to send that referee a little gift for not coming in to stop the fight. Because, look, easily, he could have stopped the fight. But I'm not sure exactly what it is. But, you know, I mean, like, look, you mentioned about the Bader-Nemkov fight. And if that fight's a non-title fight, I think Kerry Hatley comes in to finish it earlier. Now, I talked to some people about it in the industry. And the one talking point that was said to me by various people was, Bader was always trying to improve his position. He was trying to get out. Even though he was getting pummeled, he was trying to get out. And you know, as and I went back and I was watching the card this morning, and particularly with that fight, and I think that Kerry Hatley did choose, while I think you could definitely make the argument he could have stopped the fight earlier, the fact is, when he stopped the fight, I think was probably about the best time to stop the fight, just because Bader was literally running away. He had his back to Nemkov. I thought Bader looked awful on the scale last Friday. You know, how much, you know, fact of it was first light heavyweight fight in 3 years. But look, Vadim Nemkov went out there and made an excellent performance. And with John Jones not a part of the light heavyweight division anymore, it's a very interesting debate on who is the best light heavyweight out there. Scott Coker had his comments last week where he believes his division is the best light heavyweight division out there. I'm not going to get up in arms about that, Daniel. The reason being, Scott Coker's a promoter. What do you think Scott Coker's going to say? You think Coker's going to say, oh, no. UFC's got a far superior division than I do. No, of course he's going to talk up his guys. But I mean, but in Dana White, like, I laughed at Dana White's comment when he was asked about it on Saturday. He said, oh, isn't he cute? In terms of that, but, you know, Dana White has, in a way, he's right, in a way, he's wrong. Of, you know, when you look at the top light heavyweights in Bellator outside of Nemkov, they are all fighters that UFC ultimately decided to release from their deal or to not match the contract that Bellator put in front of the table. You know, I'm not going to sit here and Scott Coker can have whatever his comments he has on light heavyweight, and I think everyone has heard what his comments are, but it is a very interesting debate on who's the best light heavyweight in the world. And the guy that I feel everyone has kind of forgotten about Daniel at light heavyweight, and particularly when it comes to UFC, because when people are talking about best light heavyweight in the world, you know, Nemkov's name is being put up there, which I think it should. Dom Reyes' name's getting put out there. But the name to me that should be mentioned, and it's because we haven't seen him in, what, over a year, Thiago Santos.
Yeah, that's a great name to mention. And I think Thiago Santos is a big reason why you got to look at the UFC light heavyweight division as just vastly superior to Bellator's. I mean, Bellator right now has a guy who has a claim to be the best light heavyweight in the world, and Vadim Nemkov. I mean, last week on the podcast, I mentioned, is Ryan Bader the best light heavyweight? And I probably should have been like, well, hold on. He hasn't fought at 205 in 3 years. Probably should have mentioned that. But Bader at least had a more serious claim than Nemkov because he had been putting on dominant performances for a very long time across the board at heavyweight and light heavyweight versus guys who were coming off losses to Jones, although in fights where they probably won. And so Nemkov has a case, but when you look at the depth of both weight classes, I mean, UFC is vastly superior than Bellator. If I told you each promotion is doing an 8-man light heavyweight tournament, which one are you tuning into? The answer is the UFC's light heavyweight tournament. They just have way bigger depth. I mean, the 10th ranked light heavyweight in the UFC is head and shoulders above the 10th ranked light heavyweight in Bellator. I'm not even sure if they have 10 light heavyweights. So that's a big reason. But Tiago's a great pull because, much like Dominic Reyes, he theoretically beat John Jones in an alternate universe with three different judges watching that fight. And the difference between Reyes and Santos is the amount of injuries Santos suffered during that fight against John Jones and still performed well. I mean, the dude tore so many ligaments, the doctors going in his leg discovered a new one in there. And the idea that Santos returns and is fully healthy is a scary one. So scary, John Jones vacated the title. So that's a good pull. So you have Reyes, you have Santos, and hell, we have a great fight in the UFC this upcoming week between Rakic and Smith. I think Rakic has a great performance. That could be a guy. And then lastly, he's not top three, but Jiří Procházka is a guy with just boatloads of potential. But, let's take a moment and let's appreciate what the hell we saw. We saw Vadim Nemkov go up against, what, the second best fighter in Bellator right now, Ryan Bader, and destroy him on the feet. Destroy him. It was a dominant win. Vadim Nemkov with Fedor in his corner looked like a bright star for Bellator. I did not think he was going to win. He did just that. The future is bright for Vadim Nemkov. He's one of the brightest stars in Bellator right now. It was an unbelievable performance. He improved his stock tremendously. So it's important to take a moment and kind of appreciate what we saw out of Vadim Nemkov, because he took the narrative of Ryan Bader being the best light heavyweight in the world and he flipped it on its head.
Let me say this about that Bellator card. And look, I've got good relationships with a lot of people over in Bellator. Sometimes we agree to disagree on certain things. Maybe sometimes, you know, they probably see things that I tweet. They probably shake their head at. But so last Friday night, I had the fights on. Didn't watch the prelims. Started watching the main card on Paramount. And About second round of the Salter fight, I just said, you know what, I'm really tired. I'm just going to go to bed. And watching that fight card this morning, Daniel, clearly I made a good decision, because that was not a fun fight card to watch.
Yeah, I mean, even if you decided to not go to bed watching it, you would have been put to sleep anyway. That's the unfortunate thing with that fight card. The Julia Budd, Jessica Camille fight wasn't entertaining. The Valentin Moldavsky Roy Nelson fight was entertaining. Hell, it was just sad. But give her credit, she got the win. It was a fight where it was crazy. To me, she was clearly the better fighter. But her cautiousness in rounds one and two literally almost caught her. I mean, she waited towards the end of those rounds to turn it on and win them. So that was interesting. But Julia's talented. It's just her fight style in general wasn't great, and it played out like that. And then Roy against Valentin, I mean, it was an easy win for Moldavsky, but anyone watching that fight, I mean, can't help but be sad watching Roy Nelson just kind of go through the motions.
Yeah, I know Nolan King, who was covering the event for MMA Junkie there at Mohegan, he had mentioned in the post-fight press conference with Scott Coker that, Roy's wanting another fight and he wants it to be against Matt Mitrione. And so me and you were texting before the show, and you think about the last, maybe the prime Roy Nelson, the last time we saw a prime Roy Nelson, you got to go back to 2012, 2013, when he had put three wins in a row together in the UFC, knockout win against Dave Herman, TKO win against Matt Mitrione, and then a knockout win against Chet Congo. And then, of course, if you remember, then he got a fight against Stipe when Stipe wasn't a champion at that point. And if my memory is correctly, I believe that was actually the last fight on his current UFC deal at that time, goes out there and loses. So counting the Stipe fight, he has had 16 fights since the Chet Congo win. Daniel, he is 4-12.
That's a tough road for Roy Nelson. It's time to hang up the gloves for Roy. And it makes sense, right? He's 44 years old, right? He's been fighting the sport since 2004. A legend in the IFL If you do a Mount Rushmore for the IFL, Roy's face is on it. The reigning, defending, retiring IFL heavyweight champion, a guy who made the Ultimate Fighter work. He was to me just a very entertaining member of that heavyweight season with Kimbo Slice, and I think the greatest moment in his career had to have been that finale. The knockout over Brendan Schaub to me was just, it's the very first thing I think of when I think of Roy Nelson. But when he started at the UFC, he was already kind of up there in age, and he had a nice run to start, as you mentioned. But when you look at the run he's been on, 4-12, and his only wins are against guys who, you know, in Javier Ayala, I love him a lot, but guys who just are either past their prime or weren't very good, and the facts are simple. Dude hasn't won in 3 years, and he has fought a lot of beatable guys.
Yeah, it's it'll be interesting to see kind of if Bellator gives him a fight. You know, you gotta, you know, if you're Bellator, I'm sure you're paying a ton of money to Roy. You're paying a ton of money to Matt Mitrione. Is that a fight that ultimately is going to get people to the Paramount Network? Of course, we're going to talk about Bellator's TV future here in a moment, but do want to let you know that this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast is presented by Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like I had a long day at work, or sorry honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet.
With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. Free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it.
All you got to do is go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And a link to that unique URL is available right here in the show notes, whether you listen to this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, RadioInfluence.com, TheMMAReport.com. It is all there. I will tell you something that I always talk about is I love hearing feedback from our listeners. And one of our listeners had reached out to me and said, hey, Jason, would it be possible for you to put all your fighter interviews on the podcast feed? And I said, you know what? It's actually something I was thinking about doing. So, yeah, so I'm not sure if I'm going to release it on Saturdays or Sundays. It'll probably be on Sundays. That what I'm going to do is I'm going to put together a show that's just nothing but the interviews from the past week. If you didn't catch it on YouTube or TheMMAReport.com, so be sure to take a look out for that. That will start this week. Now, we mentioned about the Paramount Network. Daniel is, I want to say it was Ariel Helwani who initially reported that the September 11th and September 12th shows that Bellator is going to have on the Paramount Network will be their final shows on Paramount. They are heading to CBS Sports Network. We have talked about this. You know, Bellator and Paramount just is not a fit, but I was surprised that it's the CBS Sports Network. I thought that maybe you would see like prelims go to CBS Sports Network, but ultimately, and I still feel this, I feel that Showtime is the ultimate home for Bellator. And not trying to be negative at all about this. I think the last time I turned CBS Sports Network on, Daniel, was last college football season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, CBS Sports Network is not a good place for Bellator to be. It's pretty simple. Okay. The reason I say that is, a great place to be for a mixed martial arts promotion when it comes to television is a great place to be a place where people can discover your product. people, you're on a channel that people will watch, that people flip on, and they discover your product and they become new fans. CBS Sports, even though it has CBS Sports Network, and it's more in line with Bellator than maybe the idea of Paramount, CBS Sports is not a place that people stumble upon as often as even Paramount. And people are going to go to CBS Sports to watch Bellator rather than stumble upon Bellator because they just so happen to be on CBS Sports. So that's why I think it's a negative that they're moving there. And overall, it's a major negative for Bellator in that the trends are not good for them when it comes to viewership of their television product. The viewership numbers are not great for a lot of their recent cards. And for Bellator, it's a gut check time as the Zone deal wraps up in a year or so, possibly. It's a gut check time because they are vulnerable, I think, Jason, in that the guy, and I know they're owned by Paramount. I mean, I know they're owned. When the company owns you, right, that's a great deal because they're not paying you rights fees. So they're gonna want your product to succeed. But the guy who was in charge is no longer there in Kevin Kay. So that also is worrisome. So I think for Bellator, I think this next year has to be just about proving their worth to this big company. And they're going to have an opportunity to do that because they're putting them on a channel where Bellator can possibly be the most viewed non-college football / basketball product. So for Bellator, they really got to figure things out because the trends in terms of viewership numbers for their fight cards have not been great on the Paramount Network. And for them, they've got to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, you know, last week I got some comments on the MMAReport.com. And, you know, look, for the most part, I really don't like answering questions about hypotheticals for the most part. But, you know, this person was basically just saying, well, what if Bellator was sold to another company? What would Bellator MMA look like? And I was like, Viacom has put a ton of money into the Bellator product, you know, so this is not a situation where they haven't put a ton of money into it. So I don't know why you would think that. I mean, look, and I think a simple business philosophy is it's not about how much money you put into the product. It's about is that money being spent effectively? Are you getting a bang for your buck in that one? And look, I think that, you know, Bellator, I do believe you're seeing a little bit of a changing with how they've done things. And look, in the MMA circle, just because of putting a ton of money in a product doesn't mean it's naturally going to succeed. We'll talk about the PFL later on in the show because that's, to me, is a perfect example of a ton of money being thrown into something over the years, and it just has not worked out the way they would hope for it to work out. But, you know, look, I think that to me, Showtime would be the route to go. I mean, obviously, I'm going to turn on CBS Sports Network when Bellator is on there. It is very clear that his own relationship is coming to an end. It's pretty obvious, you know, whether it's going to end before 2020 or in sometime in 2021. Clearly, the partnership between DAZN and Bellator is going away. And look, that's unfortunate for Bellator because they were making good money from that DAZN partnership. But, I mean, look, you bring up a lot of great points, Daniel. Is like there's – and I've really noticed it during these past couple of Bellator events where I just feel like there isn't a ton of buzz and interest into what Bellator is doing. And I kind of feel like, in a way, the thing that got the most buzz last week was Scott Coker's comments about A, the light heavyweight division, and B, Michael Chandler, which, look, it is becoming very clear and evident to me, Michael Chandler is going to be a UFC fighter. It's only a matter of time when it's made official.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And it's a great time to move, man. Again, I think Bellator's got a world of potential, a great roster. And it's nice to be getting that Viacom money. But they really got to figure out how to get a part of the conversation again. I mean, this pandemic really hurt them in a major way. They have the ability to bounce back. They have the fighters to do it and the fights to make it happen. Scott Coker's a heck of a promoter. And again, they have a great talent roster. It would be great to get a better opportunity to showcase themselves on Showtime.
theoretically one day maybe CBS, but that's in the future. They got to work to that. They got to work to that to put on a quote unquote supercard. But I really feel like as we are at the midpoint of 2020, Bellator's at a crossroads, and for guys like Corey Anderson who took advantage of there being competition, you gotta hope that this company continues to do well, continues to move up, and they gotta figure out how to get people to pay attention to their fight cards, because the one thing they do have are talented fighters and solid fights. They just gotta capture the imagination of the internet, which is a very, very difficult thing to do. But they are vulnerable, and again, the Kevin K thing is a major thing. I mean, I would assume there's a lot of when you have Sumner Redstone pass away, you know, the head honcho of Viacom. I assume there's turnover, and I assume there's a shift. And a lot of times with these niche products, we saw it in professional wrestling, and we've seen it with combat sports. It's all about having those TV executives that are in your corner. And for Bellator, they just got to make sure they have those guys in their corner, because those are the guys that are making the case for why you should be invested in.
This is my thing about Corey Anderson, and I understand that it's tough to hear what Dana White is saying about you. Where Dana White, I mean, look, is essentially saying Corey Anderson was just another guy for us. He wasn't somebody that we felt could, be a big money maker for us. I just hope Corey Anderson and people around Corey Anderson will sit there and say, and just take those comments to heart and go, okay, what can I do to raise the Corey Anderson brand? What can I do to get people interested in watching me fight? And I've mentioned this about Sean O'Malley. Whether you love or hate Sean O'Malley, what Sean O'Malley has done is he has grown his brand outside of fighting. And that's what I think Corey Anderson and the people around Corey Anderson need to do, is to put himself in situations where Corey can become a more well-known figure than what he is right now. Because look, he definitely, when he implements his wrestling style, it's not a fighting style that a good amount of the MMA fan base that is tuning in is interested to watch.
Yeah. It's going to increase the amount of money in his bank account if he takes that advice, for sure. And this is a guy who might be the Bellator light heavyweight champion before you know it, man. When you look at what Bader did well, it was get the takedown against Nemkov. So, like, Corey Anderson might be your next Bellator light heavyweight champion. Like Nemkov's a killer. His stand-up is, like, leagues above Corey's. But Anderson could put that dude on his butt. Like, don't sleep on the idea of Anderson winning this championship right off Nemkov. I mean, I know Nemkov looks like the chosen one and he's performed well, but there's a easy path to envision Corey using wrestling to do it. Obviously, the problem for Corey is he's gotten caught plenty of times against heavy hitters.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, look, and I know Scott Coker after Bellator 243 said that he and the team would be sitting down to discuss what they're going to do at light heavyweight. We'll see what happens there. You know, I mentioned about the PFL, Daniel, and I sent you this article that was on CNBC, and there was various things that just made me go, do I really believe this? Do I really believe this is factual? And let me just throw some, let me just say buy or sell, Daniel. Buy or sell, do you believe PFL Chairman Don Davis saying the PFL is valued at $300
million? I don't believe that. I will sell that. I will sell that hardly.
Buy or sell, Davis saying the PFL is 2 years away from breaking even as it looks to solicit more investors for its $50 million round of financing.
I sell that. There's no way they're going to break even with the amount of money. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. I sell that wholeheartedly.
Okay. Here's a quote from Don Davis from this article on CNBC. Are you buy or selling this statement? Quote, It's MMA meets March Madness. When you turn on a PFL fight, you know that the fighter is fighting for his life. Every fight is an elimination fight. Every fight is game seven.
Look, man. Yeah, it's like game seven whenever like the Pistons and Spurs played in the playoffs and it was like 70 points a game if you're watching a Lance Palmer fight. I mean, look, man. It's just, you really only feel the stakes of the PFL when it's the playoffs. When it's the round robin deal, you don't necessarily feel that. So I sell that too.
All right, here is a quote from the PFL CEO, Peter Murray, who, by the way, used to work for the NFL. He says, quote, "As we see the brand marketplace of advertisers and sponsors, they can no longer ignore a fan base of 450 million around the world."
BS. I mean, no, stop it. Stop it. He's already dead. Sell it. Sell it. 50 million around. No one knows who your fighters are. The only fighters they know are the fighters who built their name prior to going to the PFL. And I don't mean to hate on the PFL. I'm just saying facts, man. I'm just saying facts. You know, Tamir Valiyev, is awesome, but like 50 million people don't know who he is. They don't know who Lance Palmer is. Get out of here.
If you tell me the UFC fan base worldwide is 450 million, okay. That is more believable. But to tell me the PFL can hit that kind of audience.
Oh, they said 450 million?
Yeah, 450.
Oh, damn. I thought you said 50 million.
No, 450 million around the world. Obviously, he's got to be talking about mixed martial arts, but look, 90% of the market share is from the UFC. Like, this article just, there was just many things that just, like, it didn't pass a smell test to me. But here was one of the, to me, what was most interesting about it. And it was under the headline, "What People Are Saying." And it said, the second paragraph was, "Competing against mega brands such as the UFC, which according to Bloomberg has a 90% grip on the MMA market share, is difficult. One banker who spoke with CNBC on the condition of anonymity compared the PFL to the XFL's two failed attempts to take on the NFL, for example." That is my biggest takeaway from this entire article. And once again, like, as a PFL, we saw this in the World Series of Fighting. In the PFL, every year there was new investors coming on, all this amount of money being poured into the promotion. At some point, the promotion's got to make money. I don't know if you're an investor who they come to and they want your money. You have to look at this and go, every year you're looking for more money.
Yeah, and where's the return? And especially, they've done nothing lately with the pandemic. And in the article, it's mentioned they're looking to have a great start to 2021. If things stay the way they are, they mentioned that, you know, they will do a season in the bubble. And who knows, maybe it will capture the imagination of people, but I doubt it. And I hope they do, though. I enjoy watching the PFL cards. I enjoy more competition. But from the get-go, the idea of the PFL has been incredibly grand, and I just haven't necessarily... It just seems like a lot of smoke and mirrors and a lot of business malarkey, and I just haven't seen the plan. And that's the deal. The interesting thing I saw was like them talking about Saudi Arabia money, which that could be a saving grace, just because like you never know, man. Like they could totally finance the PFL if they want their own private fight league. There's a lot of money in that area, so that to me is like the saving grace for the PFL. But if they get that Saudi Arabia money, but I will say this, like. Like in combat sports, man, boxing, kickboxing, professional wrestling, mixed martial arts, you don't reinvent the wheel to have a successful business. The business model is simple. You're in the promoting game. It's not about having a season. It's none of that. It's about booking fights and making stars. You got to make stars and you got to book interesting fights. You got to book interesting conflicts. Whenever that isn't the focus, you are already starting off down 0-1 on the count. It's as simple as that. When you're handicapping yourself from putting on the most entertaining, most compelling fight cards, you are already handicapping yourself in a sport that is so damn hard to be successful in. You know, there's only been one promotion that you feel really good about, and that's the UFC. Everyone else, it feels as though they're just keeping their head above water.
Here is the biggest question I have about the PFL heading into 2021. What does their roster look like? Because their heavyweight winner just came out, and he's like, either give me a fight or release me. Kayla Harrison's kind of, obviously, she wants a fight. Like, to me, I look at it and say, first off, Kayla Harrison is your franchise. You got to make her happy because she is ultimately the face of the PFL. I just wonder that whenever they have their next fight, whether somehow they put something together here at the end of the year or they put something together in for the 2021 season, is what does their roster look like outside of Rory McDonald?
I don't know, man. I feel like they're going to do a nice job of acquiring talent, but dude, like, the UFC is acquiring a lot of talent putting on these fight cards, man. I mean, they are, between the contender series and the amount of guys getting call-ups, the UFC is just wiping the talent pool thin. So there aren't a lot of possible star makers because they're getting signed elsewhere. And so just in terms of guys who you could project, there aren't a lot of interesting fighters that are going to be in that roster years down the line.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing, you know, every Tuesday on the Contender Series of, you know, what was it? It was last week, 2 weeks ago. You know, all the winners got contracts on the show. I mean, the UFC, the Contender Series has been a product of, it allows them, it has essentially, even though Dana White keeps telling us the Ultimate Fighter is going to come back, the Contender Series, what it has done is it's replaced the Ultimate Fighter in terms of the UFC's way to bring in new stars. You know, like, you know, coming up this weekend, you know, we're going to see Impa, who just is coming off a win on the Contender Series. I mean, look, it wasn't the most dynamic, dominating, oh my God type performance, but I feel like the UFC more signed them because A, they need fighters, and B, they knew, because the way these Contender Series contracts work is that once you have your fight, the UFC has a 30-day exclusive period to you. You cannot sign with another promotion within those 30 days. But you know, once day 31 mark hit, if Impa was not signed by the UFC, oh, Scotty Coker was going to be picking up that phone, calling Malky Kawa and saying, hey, I think Impa would look good in some Bellator gloves.
Yeah, I think so, man. I mean, undefeated. Dude looked solid. He would have been someone that Bellator would have jumped all over. I mean, he's got a tough fight against Maki Pitolo, but I think it's not a shocker that we're seeing him fight here within that period. I mean, the one last thought I'd have on fighter acquisitions in the non-UFC market is, because of the influx of fighters, you are seeing veterans leave the promotion. So that is a group that you could acquire. If you're the PFL, you could do Bechkaria versus Kayla Harrison. You know, I don't know how much that fight means, but it's somewhat interesting. So that's the one market you can go after. You can go after these fighters like Correa and Dunham, who have some little name value, that are gone from the UFC because the UFC is more interested in paying the younger fighters with less fights, and not so much the veterans who are out of the dance.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's every promotion is finding stars, and when I look at this UFC card come up on Saturday, I do like this fight night card overall. I was looking forward to Ricardo Lamas and Ryan Hall. Unfortunately, Ryan Hall out, so Bill Algeo gets a fight here on short notice, and Daniel, as we record this on Tuesday afternoon, let me set the number at 1.5 fighters that are currently on this card will not fight on Saturday. Are you going under?
1.5 fighters?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, over. Big time. Because it's going to just, I mean, I know, last week we saw two guys. Who was it? It was Grant and Rodriguez. So they both had their fights canceled, but they got a fight. But like, I'm gonna go over, because like, for sure, if one fight gets canceled, you're gonna see probably two fighters not have a fight. So look, we've seen it every single week. At least one guy has tested positive. We've seen a lot of, you know, what we've seen a lot of is the, it's almost like it's like false positive deals. Where it's like you have OSP, gets the positive test, but all of a sudden he's supposed to fight it in September. And we see that often. We've seen that in the NFL. So that's real interesting that we've got that. So it just seems like the odds are somebody's going to test positive. So we're going to get some canceled fights. The good thing is this is a really good fight night card. It snuck up on me. Smith versus Rakic right away isn't a marketable main event. But it's a damn good light heavyweight fight, and you begin to look at this card, and there are quite a few fights. There is a good depth to this fight night card, and I'm looking forward to it. So even if we do get guys that aren't fighting because their fight is canceled, I am still looking forward to this fight night.
Yeah, the two fights on the prelims that I will mention, I'll mention the very first fight of the night. I think it's odd matchmaking by the UFC of Sean Brady and Christian Aguilera. Christian is definitely much more of a striker than he is a wrestler. Sean Brady is much more of a grappler than he is a striker. He very well could just grapple F the hell out of Christian Aguilera in this fight. That, to me, was an odd matchmaking. Alex Caceres versus Gia Chikadze is definitely a fight that does interest me. Obviously, Chikadze, known for his kickboxing. Of course, Caceres coming off a great win. So those, to me, are the two prelim fights that stick out to me. And also, you know, I'm interested to see Impa taking on Maki Patolo. You know, Patolo coming off that quick submission loss in his last fight. Of course, this fight was initially supposed to take place last week, now on this card. When I look at the main card, Ankalaev Kudalaba is going to be fun, Daniel, for as long as it lasts. It may only last 30 seconds. It may last 5 minutes. I don't know if it hits round two. Ankalaev is a big betting favorite. Of course, this fight was supposed to take place, 2 weeks ago when Kudalaba had to pull off due to COVID. So that is definitely a fight that interests me. I mean, how do you not get interested for a Robbie Lawler fight stepping up here to take on Neil Magny? Of course, Neil Magny was initially supposed to take on Jeff Neal. I mean, I'm sure everyone has seen the medical issues that Jeff Neal is dealing with. And, of course, you know, the main event of Anthony Smith and Alexander Rakic, which, by the way, 3-round fight, not a 5-round fight. And when I saw the betting odds, Daniel, I was pretty surprised to see that Alexander Rakic is nearly a 3-to-1 betting favorite.
I know. That's shocking to me. I mean, Rakic is my pick. He's the more exciting of the two. He's just, I mean, it's hard not to get hyped when you have the head kick knockout over Jimmy Manoa on your resume. And that hype was stifled a bit against Volkan Ozdemir. He lost that split decision. It was a close fight, though. I mean, it was even headed into round three and just came down to how you scored it. I personally thought Rakic won over Ozdemir. So this is a guy in Rakic who's an incredible explosive striker who also in that Volkan fight showed an ability to use some wrestling to win rounds as well. He's very, very talented. He deserves to be the favorite, I think, but not that big of a favorite. Anthony Smith is just a man. He is a tested veteran, incredibly skilled fighter. The problem for Anthony is the beatdown he took against Glover. You gotta think, I mean, that was May 13th. I know it's been, what, 1, 2, 3 months. That just feels like a long time to recover and then have a good fight camp. So that's why I'm thinking Rakic gets the win. But damn, like, it's hard not to forget how much of a beating Smith took in that fight. So it's a hell of a fight. Smith's incredibly talented. He's has great wins on his resume over Gustafsson, Shogun, Ozdemir, Rashad Evans. I just think Rakic will be his night. I think he might be able to steal rounds and takedowns, but his striking is incredibly exciting.
One of the things, you know, of course, I always like to look at the betting odds and looking at the over-under numbers in the female fights on this card, which I've talked about a lot, that I think it's, you know, 60-ish percent of female fights in the UFC go to the judges' scorecards. Grasso-Kim fight, over 2.5 rounds, minus 390. Cyphers Martin over 2.5 is at minus 270. And the other female fight, Emily Whitmire versus Viana, over 2.5, minus 190.
Oof. Do any of those get you excited? Any of those you're looking at?
Grasso, in terms of actual fight, Grasso Kim is a very notable fight. You know, obviously we've seen Alex Grasso, but yeah, the odds are, I think, all three of those fights probably go the distance.
I think so too. I think if you're looking at odds in terms of like, which fighter am I looking at to pull off the upset? I mean, the main event is obvious. We've kind of established that, but outside of the main event, I think, the fighter I would look towards would probably be, number one, I don't feel good about it because, you know, there's a clear path to him losing, but Christian Aguilera, man, that was a hell of a win over Anthony Ivey. I mean, he was a dog there. Maybe he's going to pull off the upset against Sean Brady, but in terms of a more conservative underdog, Maki Pitolo had a slight dog here, plus 110 against the undefeated Impa. I think Pitolo might be able to win like a split decision there. And then, God, Kim at plus 260, and then I can't pick Lawler against Neil Magny. Lawler 205. It just feels like Lawler's days are done, and he's going up against a tough opponent in Neil. But I'm looking forward to that fight just because, you know, I mean, it might be the last time we see Robbie Lawler fight. It might not be, but this dude's been fighting for a very long time. He's 38. He's been through so many wars. You know, he had an unbelievable, unbelievable run to winning the UFC Welterweight Championship that I did not see coming in the mid part of this decade, this past decade. But this is a guy who's been fighting since UFC 37. I think this might be his swan song, as a loss here would be 4 in a row.
Or it could be y'all must have forgot. I mean, obviously, if you're Neil Magny, you don't want to get into a firefight with Robbie Lawler. I think he's got to stick and move, stick and move, stick and move. Don't get into too long exchanges with Robbie Lawler. So, you know, when I was looking at underdogs, Robbie Lawler plus 205 is definitely someone that interests me. Zach Cummings at plus on Five Dimes is at plus 100 against Alessio DiCherico. That to me is one I look at. Outside of that, I don't know. I mean, look, I don't think we're going to have another weekend like last weekend where the three biggest betting underdogs all come in and score wins. And, you know, Shayna Dobson, you know, man, just, you know, I think statistically it goes down as the biggest upset in UFC history in terms of what she was doing there. But, yeah, I mean, overall, it's a nice little fight card coming up on Saturday night, UFC on ESPN Plus. Number 33, but I mean, look, it's Daniel. We have to kind of monitor Friday to see as we look at this fight card. Will this fight card stay intact, or will we see some Las Vegas fighter get a fight on 48 to 24 hours notice?
I mean, look, that's got to be the expectation. We've seen it time and again, but yeah, hopefully we get you know. Hopefully we get to see Rakic and Smith. Hopefully we get to see Lawler and Magny. Hopefully we can see Caceres and Chikadze. I mean, that's... Oh, crap. That's a dog I like. Caceres. I did not see him on Best Fight Odds. I'm pretty sure he's a dog, though, against Giga. I like Caceres as an underdog there. Giga's a killer. Great stand-up fighter. But, man, I'm riding the Bruce Leroy hype train after the way he completely disposed of Chase Hooper. But I hope to God we see that fight because I really want to see it. Hopefully it doesn't get canceled.
Yeah, I mean, you look at last week, Trevin Jones, and I interviewed him about 2 months ago, and what he I remember I saw it on social media, like, I don't know, two and a half weeks ago, he put out on his Instagram, because that's where he's the most active, that he was coming to Vegas. You know, he lives and trains in Guam, and he was coming to the U.S. He was going to train at Extreme Couture, and he would, the whole purpose of him coming here was about getting a short notice fight in the UFC. And man, it worked out for him. You know, it's a lot of fighters are going to take advantage of that, and look forward to seeing what happens this week in the UFC. Of course, no Bellator event. The next Bellator event is on September the 11th. They'll be doing back-to-back shows there at the Mohegan Sun. The cards will be headlined by Phil Davis versus Lyoto Machida, and the other one headlined by Juan Archuleta versus Patchy Mix for the vacant bantamweight title. Looking forward to that Patchy Mix and Juan Archuleta fight. So looking for that. By the way, did you see the Instagram post ESPN put up on their ESPN MMA account for a potential cross promotion card between UFC and Bellator champions?
No.
So someone had sent it to me, and basically what it was ultimately saying, and the person said, he goes, am I crazy for thinking the UFC may only win five of the nine fights? I want to pull up the card. Of course, obviously heavyweight, you know what the heavyweight is, of Bader versus Miocic. That would be one of the fights that I would probably give the Bellator champion a good chance in.
Yeah, I would pick Miocic in the fight, though. But you said that's... Let's see.
So I've got the list right in front of me.
Yeah, okay.
So we got Miocic, Bader. I would still go Miocic, but I think Bader's got a really good shot in that fight.
Yeah, he's got a shot, but, I mean, Bader doesn't bring anything to the table that Miocic hasn't seen already, I don't think. But Bader's skilled, and again, great power. But I like Stipe in that fight. What's next?
Reyes or Blachowicz versus Vadim Nemkov.
I would take Nemkov over Jan. I would take Reyes over Nemkov. So let's give this one to Bellator, though. I'll give this one to Bellator, even though I'd probably pick Reyes over Nemkov.
Yeah, I would definitely think the tougher fight for Nemkov would be Dom Reyes. Middleweight, Israel Adesanya versus Gegard Mousasi or Douglas Lima.
I really want to see Adesanya versus Lima. But
Adesanya wins both those fights. Like if Adesanya was smaller, like, you could talk me into Lima. But Adesanya versus Mousasi, every day of the week and twice on Sunday, I think Adesanya wins that fight. The only thing is Israel looked awful against Joel Romero. But yeah, I like Adesanya.
Welterweight is a 50-50 fight in my mind. Usman versus Lima.
Yeah, let's give that to Lima. Just to give Bellator a win, because that is a really close fight. And what I really love about Lima is, let's say he gets put on his back. Oh, God, I think he's so slick there. But on the feet, I think that's a great fight. So, honestly, even though Usman's probably definitely the favorite, I'm going to give Lima. So we're 2-2 already. You know, I'm showing Bellator some love, but I feel like things are about to not go their way with the lightweight fight.
Khabib versus Patricio.
I love Patricio. I'm probably going to pick him in the next fight, but not against Nurmagomedov.
Patricio versus Volkanovski.
I'm going to give Patricio the fight. Straight up. If Patricio and Volkanovski got matched up at a UFC in a month from now, 2 months from now, I would pick Patricio Pitbull to beat Volkanovski. Patricio's the best fighter in Bellator.
I would agree exactly with you. I'd pick Patricio in that fight. That, to me, would be a very interesting fight, just because their size pretty much the same. Even though I do think in the UFC featherweight division, I think there would be stylistically tougher fights for Patricio just based on size differences. Women's featherweight, we've seen this once. What if we saw it again? Amanda Nunes and Chris Cyborg.
Look, if we saw it again, it'd be the biggest Nunes fight the UFC could do, unfortunately, for the UFC. But, I mean, this is the easiest one. The Khabib fight was easy, too. But, yeah, I mean, Nunes over Cyborg, no doubt about it.
Here would be the interesting question. I brought this up on the Fight HQ podcast. If, like, look, right now is the prime of Amanda Nunes' career. If she were to face Chris, if a prime Nunes took on a prime Chris Cyborg, who wins?
I think a prime Nunez, man. Look, Chris Cyborg's stand-up is unbelievable. The thigh game was awesome. But the difference between prime Nunez and prime Cyborg is I feel like Nunez is a much better athlete and much more well-rounded in avenues to victory.
Bantamweight, Peter Yan versus Juan Archuleta or Patchy Mix?
This is another one that's not close. Archuleta and Patty Mix just, they're not at the same level as Yan. The Bellator Bantamweight division isn't established currently. And Yan is above, head and shoulders above those guys.
And the final one, Valentina Shevchenko versus Alimele McFarlane.
Look, I love Alimele, but Shevchenko, I mean, sorry, Alima. You're a great star in Bellator, but Shevchenko's an absolute killer. And I would pick Shevchenko. So, I mean, you know, what was it? I guess it was only two fights I picked for Bellator, guys. But, you know, oh, three. I picked Patricio over Volkanovski, Lima over Usman, and Nemkov over Reyes. Is there any others that I didn't pick that you would have?
No, there's not.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, hey, it's a fun exercise. I liked it. It was fun to get the brain flowing. Poor Patricio's got to fight multiple times in one night.
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, first off, we know it's never going to happen. It's pure hypothetical. It's never, we're, you know, because, A, there is no benefit for the UFC to do a cross-promotion show with anyone. It's just, it's no benefit to them. Not, you know, financially, you could say it's beneficial to fighters, but, yeah, it's a fight card. That will never happen, but it is it's always an interesting time in terms of MMA. Of course, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor this week, and that is Roman. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. If you are approved, you can get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. All you got to do to get started is go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport, complete an online visit, and if a healthcare professional approves you, you'll get 15% off your first order of ED at GetRoman.com/MMAReport. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week on Sitting Ringside, an interesting story. In late 2000, WCW signed a tag team called Air Raid. And then, of course, the company was sold to WWE. Their contracts were not picked up. One went on to become the phenomenal AJ Styles. The other disappeared from professional wrestling until recently, as he had a cameo on Talkin' Shop of Mania. We're going to find out whatever happened to Air Paris and listen to his story. And I will tell you, it does have a happy ending, but a lot of bumps in the road. Also, does he still stay in touch with AJ Styles? What's his relationship with Bill Behrens, who got him in the business? And can we maybe see Air Paris make a comeback in the pro wrestling business? It's a heartfelt, honest conversation about a guy who got in at 14 and at 21 had it all, and at 22 had nothing. A fascinating conversation with a nice guy. Ladies and gentlemen, whatever happened to Air Paris this week on Sitting Ringside?
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.